You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Well, boy, we have this platform that we've built, and we owe it to the fishery that we love so much to use that platform to educate the next generation of anglers, to educate even, you know, people that have been doing it a long time that maybe need to want to learn about best handling practices or what have you. I think it's a really important facet of the event.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Guidepost. I think we're on like episode 145 or 146 now. I can't believe that that y'all still want to listen to us. But hey, you know, I'm not going to question it. We're just going to keep rolling. Got a really cool special guest today. All the team at the Guides Association was super fortunate. Because we were invited up to the Schoolie tournament as one of the benefactors. And for y'all who don't know, Ted Upton, who is the brains behind North Point Brands, one of those brands is Cheeky. And they have run that tournament for a very, very long time and support the Guides Association through all that hard work. So we decided to have Ted on here to talk about everything that's going on at North Point Brands and Cheeky. So, Ted, how are you doing today, buddy? Long time no see, like 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks, right, at the tournament. Yeah. Tony, thanks for having me on. I'm psyched to be here. We're doing well. We're coming off the Schoolie tournament. It was a great success. We had a lot of fun, a lot of fish caught.
You know, it's always fascinating for me to go up there. Because you see all of those conservation-minded brands that are teaming up with your conservation-minded brands and helping out organizations that drive conservation. And I guess people who are listening to this and, you know, they look up the Schoolie tournament, it's over 500 anglers and it's a weighted tournament. But what they don't know is how small it was when it started.
And that's right.
How y'all have stewarded it, you know, over time and turned it into this juggernaut. But tell everyone how it started, yeah. Ted. I think that's a great story.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. It's been a wild ride. This past year was our 13th annual Schoolie tournament, and I was pulling up some photos for the team at North Point not too long ago of the actual start of the event 13 years ago was quite literally, we say this all the time, but in a dirt parking lot. And there were no more than 30 folks. I was standing on a folding chair and it was an excuse to go fishing. You know, we're diehard anglers here in the Northeast, and we wanted to get out there in May and celebrate the arrival of striped bass migrating up the coast. That was how it started. And it's evolved so much in 13 years. And we feel so, I think, privileged is the right word, to be able to host such an event. And really want to make it a platform for conservation. That's been the focus for the last 5, 6, 7 years of the event as the event grew. And I feel so fortunate that we've been able to do that. And there are several reasons for that. I think one of the main ones is, as you've already pointed out, the community up there. It's just such a diehard Northeast fly fishing community that cares an awful lot about the resource of striped bass. And then coupled that with our wonderful sponsors that come to the event each year and share in our conservation-minded approach to striped bass. The tournament is presented by Sims every year, and we have other great sponsors, Costa, Yeti, Turtlebox, Scientific Anglers, just to name a few, Thomas & Thomas. And it's really become a celebration of striped bass and an with an emphasis on education and learning how we can protect the resource.
Yeah, you know, it's I love events like your tournament, because communities that are that strong and have that ethos, they are begging to be able to get together, you know, break bread, see each other once a year. And it's like, they don't care that it's 42 degrees when they wake up in the morning. Hey, you know what? They're wearing Sims Gore-Tex, so they're dry. Right. But they don't care. They don't even care if the fish aren't there. You know what?
That's right.
What they care about is seeing their friends, seeing sometimes the younger crowds, people that they look up to. That's it. Dude, let me tell you something, man. You know, Jenkins won the Fly Fishing Mag Sims 2024 Conservationist of the Year, and that was a representation of all the work from everyone at the Guides Association, Peter Jenkins, our chairman, and just really validation for everything that we were doing. But the best part, the most awesome part of my day was I walked past this group of kids, and I mean kids, like college kids, and they were all wearing our hats. And I just turned around and I was like, you know, y'all don't have any money, and you'd spend $30 on our hat, like to support the Albie Project or striped bass conservation. And I'm just like, that is awesome. And we took them, we took them over to the booth, gave them free stuff as appreciation. But like, seeing that new generation with all of us old guys and seeing that new generation coming up, man, I'm telling you what, like, if that doesn't make you feel good, I don't know what does, right?
It's amazing. For those of you who have not been to the tournament, one of the things about it is that it's not about the competition. You know, do we crown a winner every year? Yes, but it's so much more about the camaraderie, the coming together of the community, the celebration of the bass. It almost has like a festival style feel at this point. And that's exactly the way we want it. And we've always believed in de-emphasizing the competitiveness of it, even just the tournament element in general. This is really an opportunity to come together, learn about striped bass, learn what you can do to help support the conservation of striped bass. And I think that, you know, people have asked me, Tony, like, oh, you should replicate this event in different regions around the country. It'd be such a great idea for you to do. And I'm always like, you know, I don't think so. There's some magic sauce here in the Northeast with this community, this time of year, these fish migrating up the coast.
And it's a wading tournament, so you don't need $150,000 center console to compete. It's literally like our whole thing with stripers has always been it's every man's fish. You do not need six figures worth of equipment and a boat to catch a striped bass. And it brings everyone together of wildly different means. I mean, wildly different means. And you're all equal in front of the fish, right? It's awesome.
The barrier to entry from the beginning has always been designed to be as low as possible. Grab a buddy. All you need is a partner and some waders. You know, this is a wade fishing only tournament. There's no boats allowed. The boundaries are all of Cape Cod. So, you know, that's hundreds and hundreds of miles of coastline. And, you know, we want people to come out in droves to learn about this fishery. So, you know, you compare that to some of the other tournaments that existed at the time that we founded the Schoolie tournament. And it was very very different, right? And sort of that's actually kind of where the name comes from, the irony of the Schoolie tournament. You know, it's Schoolie because we're celebrating the return of these fish, and there are a lot of smaller fish this time of year. Certainly we're targeting the bigger fish as big as we can, but that, you know, that's kind of the irony in the name of the Schoolie tournament. So
I think the responsible aspect of it too is you include things like science symposiums and best practices for catching and releasing fish. You've adjusted the rules so there's less handling of smaller fish, and you know, and that you don't handle a fish unless you're going to register it the length of it. So it's just, you know, it's as it's matured, I would just like to say, as someone who has sat in a room at tournaments that there were bodyguards at the entrance of the judges room that we sat in because the prizes were money prizes that were big money, and people got really drunk and really angry at those tournaments. And we had to have like two giant dudes sitting at the doorway to the judges station because people were yelling and screaming at us that they won the $5,000 prize. And, you know, they send us a picture of a fish that looked like they took it with a potato instead of a, you know, and you're like, dude, I can't even see the fit. Like, what did you do? Like lick the camera lens before you, like, it's just foggy. And I see raindrops and I think that's a striper. You did not win, you know? And like the guys want to kill you. They want to beat your brains out. I'm done with those tournaments. That's, you know, back in the early 2000s, that's what we used to do. And like brings out the worst in people, the absolute worst. And all you see at Cheeky, all you see at Cheeky is like when people win, you have like 200 people standing in the freaking rain with heaters on under a tent, like all shivering from freezing their ass off all day. And they're cheering the people who won. Yeah. It's awesome. What a community. It's going to be hard to recreate that anywhere, Ted, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. And the moment you introduce a financial award into a tournament, it changes everything. And which is why 100% of the proceeds from the Schoolie tournament every year do go to our beneficiaries, ASGA, Stripers Forever, and Keep Fish Wet. And Tony, we really rely on those three organizations to help guide the event every year. And every year we sit down with members from those organizations and ask, where are we? We want to rely on our scientists to inform us as event organizers on what rules we may need to change, what updates we may need to make. And I think that's a really important facet of the evolution of the event. Two examples actually of that over the years, you can't score a fish that's less than 20 inches. And the provided rulers, you know, block that area of a sub 20 inch fish off. And that's to reduce handling of the smaller fish. That was a recommendation that was made to us by our beneficiary partners. All fish have to be measured at the water line. That's hard to do, but it's important. And you know, this tournament is about the fish, so we're not particularly worried about the angler, you know, not being able to measure the fish up on a bank or taking the fish out of water. That's not what this event is about. So all fish have to be measured at the water line, in or at the water, and that, as we know, is a crucial element to catch and release mortalities. So these are just a couple of the rule updates that we've made over the years to try to continuously improve the event and help strike bass.
You know, Ted, I think that's just a leadership role that y'all have decided to take on. It wasn't mandatory, but you know, there's always going to be critics of everything, and I just, with all that y'all do and the thought that's put into it, when you start thinking about the lessons that have been learned, the enormous amount of funds over the years that y'all have generated to various conservation groups, just the whole underlying ethos of the event, you can't put a dollar figure on training the next generation. Right? Because they're the ones that are going to take over when we're gone. And when I look across that tournament and see just the average age of the people doing it and doing it the right way, you know, there is value in it for me that far exceeds the check that y'all send us. Not that that's not important, but you are creating that next generation of conservation minded anglers who are passionate and educated and are going to be the leaders
I think that's the responsibility that we, you know, that we have as the fortunate folks who get to host this thing every year. The raising of the money is fantastic. This year we raised, you know, $37,000, for our beneficiaries. It's the number's over $150,000 in the last 5 years alone. But the money only gets you so far. And I think the responsibility that we realized we had with this tournament after 5 or 6 years was, well, boy, we have this platform that we've built, and we owe it to the fishery that we love so much to use that platform to educate the next generation of anglers, to educate even, you know, people that have been doing it a long time that maybe need to want to learn about best handling practices or what have you. I think it's a really important facet of the event. You know, what started in a dirt parking lot as a chance, an excuse to go fishing, really has turned into an opportunity to shed light on the plight of striped bass and hopefully make a difference, not just with our dollars, but with our actions as well.
So you're, you know, North Point Brands, y'all made some moves recently. So, I mean, I guess the first, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it's your business, not mine, but, you know, obviously Cheeky was kind of like the foundation, and then Wingo, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So, I founded, Cheeky about, 14 years ago. Manufacturer of high performance fishing reels and accessories. Along the way, we also started Wingo Outdoors, which has provided different accessories for anglers over the years. It's now, as it turns out, very focused on the dog market. Find me an angler that doesn't like dogs. They're hard to find, right? Or an outdoor enthusiast that doesn't have a dog. So, and then very recently, we've had a coming together with Rep Your Water, who is now part of our platform of brands. If you don't know Rep Your Water, based in Colorado, and a very conservation-minded brand. I think that some of the reasons that we've added them to our platform are just the synergies that we share in our approach to conservation, our approach to developing amazing products. And, you know, one of the recent moves, in addition to welcoming Rep Your Water to our brands, is that we've really made a financial commitment through our revenues to giving back. So, you know, you often see percentage back on company websites. What we've done is committed 3% of our revenues back to conservation-minded organizations. So all of North Point, anyone who makes a purchase from any of our brands at North Point Brands, 3% of that sale is going back to conservation organizations that we know and love and cherish. And I just, the distinction there that I think is really important is that it's not of profits, it's of sales. And that generates a much bigger number every year. And that's a really important facet of what we're trying to accomplish. Not only is it just the right thing to do, it's also better business. Your hat says it right there, better business through conservation, right? So,
you know, Ted, it's funny, like all these young fellers and ladies that work with us at the Guides Association now, they all are incredibly smart with social media and marketing. And they'll throw stuff at me that's like, you know, that younger generation, that under 35-year-old generation, they make like 80 to 90% of their buying decisions based on what the company stands for.
Yeah.
So it is literally better business through conservation, because they will come back and be like, well, you know, does this company give back? What do they stand for? Is this da 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 da? And then, you know, they do a little bit of research and they, you know what, I'm going to buy that Cheeky reel. Right. I'm going to buy that. I'm going to buy that Wingo dog leash that has a striped bass pattern on it for little, you know, little Ace, my border collie, you know, and it's just little simple things like that, that they, you know, this younger generation, and they are getting older and they do have more disposable income. And that's how they make their buying decisions. It is certainly vastly different than our generation. right?
It sure is. And I mean, it's that sort of famous TED talk, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. It's the why that I think really drives the purchasing decision. What do you stand for as a company? What is your reason to exist as a company, right? It's I think it's so important. And I think what we've seen in consumer trends over the years is that we want to be at the tip of the spear when it comes to this. We want to be a leader in conservation. We want to be ahead. And, it's already begun, but over the next 3-5 years, I think it will be almost a requirement by our consumer that the brands that we buy from are conservation minded. They have a small footprint, carbon footprint. And, these are all things that we're working on at North Point Brands. Are we perfect? Certainly not, right? But I think the first step for any company is to acknowledge where your blind spots are and try to begin to work on them. So that's our focus. We want to really make an impact, beyond the products that we make and the things that we sell. We want our company to stand for something and really make an impact. The younger generation, as you pointed out, is kind of coming into more disposable income, spending more money, and they're becoming leaders in this initiative for businesses to be conservation first.
So, Ted, as you're talking, it's funny because there's another kind of Massachusetts brand, Massachusetts company that's doing a lot of the same stuff in a different part of the industry. And there's a podcast coming out with him either right before we release this or right after. I don't know where it is in the editing queue, but we did a podcast with Mike Hogan recently, and he's taken all the science that we're learning from the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries catch and release mortality study on striped bass. He's taken all that science and he is changing how his lures are manufactured to adhere to that. So stripers, the normal angler can just buy one of his plugs or epoxy jigs and just have it set up to have the survivability of striped bass out of the box. They don't have to do anything. Have it set up for the survivability of striped bass to be better. It's just as I'm listening to you talk, you haven't heard that podcast yet, but there's literally another brand in the same industry, a tiny bit different because it's terminal tackle and conventional lures, but they're doing the same thing that you're doing. And I find that fascinating that y'all probably know each other.
And we do. Yeah. I know Mike pretty well. I mean, it's Mike and I go way back to Massachusetts based companies in the fishing industry. And I can't wait to listen in to Mike's podcast. That's awesome. But yeah, they do great things over there at Hoagie Lures, and that's so cool. I actually am just learning this for the first time, Tony. So anytime you can take a science-based approach and incorporate it into, whatever it is you're doing, principles at your company, product development, which it sounds like is what's going on with Hoagie Lures, I think it's a fantastic thing. When it comes to the striped bass fishery, with mortality rates, what they are, and we're still learning more about that, any improvements we can make to technology to help in that regard are going to make a meaningful difference, in my opinion.
Yeah, to me, it's wild that you have because let me tell you something, Mike ain't a dumb bunny, right? I think he went to I don't know where the hell he went or what his degree is, but not your average bear. When it comes to I'm going to start a tackle business, the guys, and you're the same way, your background, not your average dude who just kind of fell into it. You have a pretty damn good pedigree in business. And what you did was just say hey, you know what? I'm going to probably be working for the rest of my life. I might as well do something I enjoy. And you took you took all that smarts and education and turned it into North Point Brands. And, Hogan pretty much did that. I think y'all could be doing different stuff and making buckets of money. But you did that. You took that path that was I'm going to kind of do what I want to do and then still try and be successful. Right. It's just y'all are pretty similar. right? I didn't know you knew Mike, but you're pretty darn similar.
Yeah, we go way back. Well, thank you. Kind words. But it's just, you know, you have a lot of choices in life, and you might as well surround yourself with work and people that to help you enjoy your day to day. And for me, I get an awful lot out of that. I love what I do. I wake up every day excited to come to work and develop new products, think about different strategies for how we can, market to fishermen or create, you know, products that solve real problems, provide real value to consumers, give back, make an impact. Like, all these things get me just so excited. And I'm really fortunate because the team at North Point Brands is just, it's incredible. We've grown a lot over the last few years, and that's allowed us to bring in really some of the best people from around the outdoor industry.
Oh, listen, hey man, it's one part of the cheeky. Your Ellen and my Sue were talking, and I was just like, watch out, here we go. Like, two of the most efficient people in the world talking together, we're in trouble. And I was like, I gotta pull Ted aside. There may be problems on the horizon if Sue and Ellen get together, right? Because, like, Ellen just comes across, you know, she's one of your marketing people, and like everything she does is efficient. You know, from her emails to communications to everything else, everyone's on the same page. She's just herding cats. Sue is my COO. She does literally everything that I am horrible at with such an efficiency that it's shocking. And then I'm looking at two of them at that restaurant talking, and I'm like, this could be either really bad or really good. I'm not sure. It's the same thing. Yeah. Like, we have this incredible team at the Guides Association. I'm just super lucky that I wake up in the morning and I've surrounded myself with people who are way the hell better at all the things that I'm terrible at and are equally as passionate. You know, that's what it comes down to, right?
Well, Ellen deserves a tremendous amount of credit for the way that the Schoolie tournament runs. And that's always been really important to me personally, that the event run really well. So we put a lot of effort. And I mean, you've all been to events that are, you know, they're delayed or it drags on, or, you know, the list goes on. And to me, I think it's really important that an event, run, you know, you can't control everything, but do what you can to control the things that you can to run an event that's smooth, is fun, high energy. And that's really what we try to focus on, because at the end of the day, Tony, it's supposed to be fun. This is fishing. Like, we're all in this at some level because we love to fish. We're no different at North Point Brands. We love to fish. We love the outdoors. And so if we can choose,
you never hear anybody complaining.
Right.
Like, another tournament, people are going to pull you aside and be like, you know what I think? And you're just like, oh God, I don't want to know what you think. Like, I'm just going to leave now, you know? But like, I never hear like that undercurrent of like, oh, well, they judged my fish wrong or blah. Like, it's, everyone's just having a good time. You see, like, you know, dads and moms like chasing their little kids around in the parking lot, and, you know, everybody kind of just, you know, enjoying the time that they spend with each other. And nobody's like, oh man, that talk was too long. They should have cut that down shorter. Blah, 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 blah. Like, none of it.
We've learned a lot over the years. Yeah, I said, our 13th year. So we've gotten pretty good at running it, but it's a huge production and a lot of work goes into getting it organized. And I will say that, the day after the event is it's a tiresome day where the team is bleary eyed, and, you know, it's really become a fun tradition. It's our day to go fishing. You know, people always ask me at the event, you know, did you get out there today? And, you know, I'm kind of like,
I did not. the Sunday after the event has become a fun tradition for us to get out there as a team, celebrate the hopefully the success of the event, do what we love on the water. But yeah, the whole vibe at the event, that's sort of what I'm referencing and going for, is that it's low key, it's fun, it's not competitive, it's grassroots, it's low barrier to entry, it's about the fish, it's about catch and release, it's about education and learning. And I think that's a really important piece that we recognize that we have, and we're always going to work hard to maintain that element of the tournament.
It's just thinking about it. I think the only complaint I ever heard is that people don't register in time and it gets shut down. And I mean, and y'all are over 500 anglers right now. So it's like, where do you even, you know, and people travel from like near and far. It's not just like the local community. I was talking with Ross Purnell from Fly Fishing, you know, guy's been the editor of Fly Fisherman magazine forever. And, you know, kudos to Ross for running that so well. But, you know, some of his staff, you know, they're from that like southeastern, south central Pennsylvania area. And they were like, hey, I'm going to catch my first striper, you know, this weekend, hopefully. Like, what's it like? You know, and I'm like, different than a carp or a trout, you know, hold on, make sure you hold on to your rod good. And you know, just like that childlike excitement with like people That's right. who are professionals and, you know, in the industry, but have not experienced, you know, what Cape Cod has to offer, and really kind of getting that real taste, you know.
It was so great to have Ross there, and the presentation of the conservation of the year to Peter Jenkins, the chairman of ASGA, was just a really special moment to be able to like have the schoolie tournament be a platform for that type of award is really meaningful to me and to North Point Brands. You know, when Ross reached out and said, you know, we're giving this award to Peter, and we want to do it at Schooley. I mean, what an honor and what an opportunity again to shed light on the event. But you're right, we have people that come. It's not just the Northeast community. We literally have people that travel from all over the country, internationally. We do cap the event at 550 anglers every year. It does sell out very fast. We do have to develop a waiting list, but you know, if we were to make it larger, we would have real physical constraint concerns there. You know, if you've ever been to the Cape, there aren't a ton of facilities that can host that many people in one place at one time. So to keep the vibe fun and upbeat, and to keep the tournament running like a top, that's what we've elected to do. But we have this conversation every year, Tony. It's push and pull. You know, our goal is to raise as much money as we possibly can, right? And so and use it as the platform that it needs to be. So, you know, we want to have as many eyeballs on this thing as we can. We do a lot of like live look-ins with the sponsoring brands. Like, we, you know, it was a mid-50s rainy, windy day, which is what it seems to always be. So you really, you know, for example, we did a live look-in with Sims, and you know, they were out there on the water with all their gear on, staying dry, and that helps put a national spotlight on it for a regional event. And that's something we've focused on the last few years, is how can this, you know, regional in-person event reach a sort of a national exposure level.
You know, Ted, let me tell you something. I don't mean to correct you here, but it's not. Look, I think one thing I found out on a national scale is, you know, when you start looking at like people who don't necessarily live, you know, super close to the coast, and you had them list like what domestic fishery would you want to participate in? Cape Cod striped bass is really high up there. Not only that, it's one of the only ones that does not require a boat. You know, like, you want to go like Louisiana redfish, you better have a flat skin. I mean, you can get some in a kayak or something like that, but like, to really experience it, you got to have a skiff. You want to fish Chesapeake Bay? You damn well better have a boat. because there is like no public access, none. They're like two state parks for a couple hundred miles. Like there's just nothing that exists here. And then you go to Cape Cod, and yeah, I mean, parking can be a pain in the butt. And there, so there are some private areas, but man, there's a lot of public access. A lot.
There sure is. I think it's one of the things that makes it, I mean, that the Cape Cod fishery is so special. It's so diverse. I mean, if you're not careful, you might mistake yourself for being on a flat in the Bahamas. It has that type of vibe. Or you could be, you know, on the end of a jetty getting, you know, smashed in the face with salt spray. It's, you know, cuts and rips and rivers and estuaries and marshes and beaches and flats. And it's just such an extraordinary place. And the, as you pointed out, the access is, you know, incredible. And you don't need to have a boat. You really, in fact, I prefer it on foot. And the ability to access such a diverse fishery in a given day, being able to do.
I mean, as fly fishing, it's a lot more intimate.
Right.
Right. It's a lot That's more right. intimate when you're standing in the water. Cause I'll tell you what, a lot of times fish don't know you're there. If you're in a boat, right. they know you're there. Like they hear that slap and they know you're there, but like you can see some crazy stuff. If you're wading and you're in the right spot, you know, I think a lot of people equate, you catch striped bass any way you want, catch them on bait and catch them trolling, you can do whatever, but you can also catch them standing on a beautiful sand flat in crystal clear water and sight cast to them just like a damn bonefish. And that's, you know, that's what people, there aren't many spots you can do that, but Cape Cod is kind of like the pinnacle of experience in that. And it's just, you know, when you get to like how you want to fish and why you fish a certain way, I think that's a matter. It changes as you age as a fisherman and you go through, you know, you go through all sorts of, I want to catch the biggest fish, I want to catch the most fish, I want to catch the hardest fish. And you kind of figure out like what you love. And you're okay just kind of doing that. And for me, and I know for a lot of other people, there is nothing like hunting a single fish.
Yeah, I live for that. I actually want to tell a quick story about this. Last October on the Cape, I was out with my chief marketing officer, Peter Vandergrift, and we had, it was one of those beautiful 70 degree days in October. No, not a whiff wind, you know, which didn't help the fishing, but we saw, you know, at every spot we were at, we saw dozens and dozens of, you know, 3 foot plus sized fish. And what made this day so special for Peter and me is that we didn't catch a single fish. We didn't touch a single fish. It's the best day of fishing I've ever had without actually catching a fish. The visual stimulation from trying to feed these fish. And it was tough conditions. Like I said, it was just absolutely glass calm. We tried everything in our box and we just couldn't feed a fish. We tried it all. But we both said to each other at the end of the day, boy, that was a really, really fun day on the water.
You just said it though, Ted. You feed the fish,
right?
You're not just like, you're not going for like a reaction strike, you know, you're not, you have to physically make that fish eat. And it is so much different. And every, what you learn is like every fish is different and you start to learn how to read them. Like each individual fish, like what are their fins doing? How did they react to this? And that like little fishing computer in all of our brains goes into overdrive. And I think that you're just like in that moment, you're there.
Totally.
And you're totally like, you know, your brain's like burning up being like, what am I doing wrong? And that's, I don't know. That's what I love about it.
Me too. And like, we could have in that moment chosen to have gotten really frustrated by that, that experience of not being able to successfully feed a fish, but that's not the route we chose to go. And I think it speaks to the, like you were saying, the maturation that all anglers go through, you know, over the course of their angling journey. And it's I'm going to remember it as one of the most special days I've had on the water, the number of opportunities that we had without success was almost comical. So yeah, it's a special fishery. You know, I grew up on the coast of Maine, and I've targeted striped bass my entire life. It is a really meaningful species to me. So to be where I am now, having run the tournament for 13 years, raising as much money as we have, it's really a full circle. I pinch myself that I get to do this every day. It's an amazing opportunity.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the community, the nonprofits that work so hard every day to keep striped bass around, that whole community, you know, we built up there, the effort does not go unnoticed. I'm sure that there are times with your team that you look at the hours and everything that you pour into it, and you're like, man, that's a lot of work. But like, from our lens that we're looking through, like, you know, we're just happy to be a good partner, to be included in this, you know, in what you're creating, what you created and what you're continuing to create up there. And you know, all that we can say really is just like a heartfelt thank you. We hope that we're as good of a partner as we think we are. And you know, hope to continue this partnership. But it's an amazing thing. We're always excited that when we see North Point Brands grow, it's something that we, you know, put on our calendar and, you know, just look forward to, you know, it's a great excuse to get out and fish in an area that I don't get to see, you know, being 8 hours south of y'all. I don't get to see it as much as I'd like to. It's a great touch point for the, you know, the Guides Association community up there. Helps us develop further up there, even though that's a pretty big stronghold for us. And then it's just great to see friends, you know. It's such a, I always wanted to, when I ran Lefty Craze Tie Fest for 20 years, that Mid-Atlantic fly show, I always wanted it to be like Cheers, right? Another Boston thing. I wanted people to feel like Norm when he walked into Cheers. Norm! You know, and just be like, you know, just feel like, holy shit, this is my second home. And I think that's what y'all are doing up there. It's really special, wow, man, you know?
I appreciate the kind words, but I think the thanks should be directed back at you and ASGA for the amazing work that you all are doing. It's so important, the advocacy that you provide for policy and all of the programs that you run are just fantastic. And so it's a privilege for us to be able to support those. I've had so much fun doing the Albi Project stuff with you all as well. That's been a blast the last couple of years and really shed some light on an interesting fishery that we, you know, didn't know that much about migratory patterns. So that's been a lot of fun. And I just want to say thank you for all of your leadership and guidance and the entire organization at ASGA for the work that you do. It's so important. Please keep it up. And if there are ways we can support
you, know, you all. Ted, I'm too dumb to quit. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just keep doing this until they just find me in my office one day slumped over my computer. It's too much. Like, I think it's just like what your business, your company is for you. It just becomes who you are. And yeah, I mean, you just keep chugging along and you make decisions and you pray they're the right ones and you learn from your mistakes and just keep trying to go in the same direction. And I think this is one thing that's true about the Guides Association and your company is, you know, you're doing okay when these good people come to you and work with you and they don't want to leave.
That's right.
That's when you know, like all the other indicators, everything else you're doing, if you got good people that are coming to you and sticking with you and are really satisfied with their work, you know, their work life relationship and the goals that they're working for. And, you know, I just kind of see y'all growing and keeping talent. And that ain't the easiest thing to do. And when somebody's doing that, you're doing the right thing. Right.
Well, you know, we often say here that if employees at North Point Brands look back and say that was the best place I ever worked, that that's the only success we need. Everything else will take care of itself with great people, taking care of the planet, and great products. That's what we're focused on. That's what we're here to accomplish. And
well, we can only hope, Ted, that, you know, other brands in our world, both fly and conventional, take a look at what North Point Brands and your friend Mike Hogan over at Hoagie Lures, you know, what they're doing, what y'all are doing for conservation, and kind of look at it and be like, holy shit, we're missing the boat. Like, we're, you know, we are missing the boat because these people are prospering because they put their money where their mouth is.
That's right.
And that's, you know, I think the more people that follow y'all's lead, the better things are going to get for everyone, especially the resource. And I beg any brands listening to this to follow the lead of these groups, you know, these companies, because to me, it's the future. So,
well, thank you, Tony. It's not our, you know, we didn't set out to be a model for that, but you know, if other brands can look at what we do, or we can look at what other great brands in the space are doing to help make business better through smart choices, smart conservation approach. And I think it builds a better world.
So. Well, I'll tell you what, I couldn't have said that any better. This is a great place to kind of end it. And, you know, from everyone at the Guides Association, you know, we're here to help, and we sure are appreciative of all the work that your brands are doing to make it better for everyone. You know, look forward to having you on the podcast again, and thank you for taking a little bit of your day to share your experience with our listeners, Ted. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony. Likewise, it's been a real pleasure. Appreciate you having me on.